Welcome to the Florida Roundup here on Florida Public Radio. Thanks for listening this week and supporting public media. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
And I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. Well, she's in. Agriculture Commissioner Nikki Fried made it official this week. The lone statewide elected Democrat, Fried, now joins Charlie Crist in the Democratic primary as they both make a run for the governor's mansion.
Fried is expected to draw support from progressives and younger voters in the primary fight. She will need to pull votes away from the more centrist Crist, a congressman and former governor as a Republican, to emerge as a general election candidate next year.
Now, the Fried campaign is working to build a narrative of this candidate as a champion of ordinary Florida residents, someone who has stood up for farmers as ag commissioner and sought justice for defendants when she worked as a public defender.
It is not too early to be thinking, Melissa, about the 2022 governor's race.
That's
here,
right,
in Florida, right? The Democratic primary is a mere 14 months away. The campaign, the rush for support and campaign cash is underway right now. We want to hear from you here today, live on this Friday, 305-995-1800. 305-995-1800. Share your thoughts on Twitter, at Florida Roundup.
Already getting your tweets. We'll go to those in a moment. Commissioner of Agriculture Nikki Fried is on the line to share more about her campaign. Commissioner Fried, a pleasure to have you on the Florida Roundup.
Oh, thank you for having me back.
Good to have you. Let's get into your campaign and your comments about your opponent should you win the primary. You've called Governor DeSantis an extremist, even a dictator, who you say is destroying democracy in Florida. What's your message to convince voters out there who have approved of his handling of the pandemic, the economy, to make a change and vote for you?
Yeah, I go back to, not only being a fighter for all people in our state, but, I've seen that we have passed, consistently for the last 20 plus years, constitutional amendments in our state, whether that was class size, whether that was the dock stamps for our environment, for medical marijuana, to restoration of civil rights, the bullet train. And every single time that those issues get to Tallahassee, special interests take over and they get dismantled and goes against the will of the people. And we saw a lot of that even this legislative session, that in record numbers, you saw people going and voting by mail. And so the Republicans came in and they trashed that. And now we have a voter suppression bill. We also have an anti-protest bill. And these are things that don't show that we care about the people. And so the people of our state need to understand that the system that they are operating under in the state of Florida is rigged and goes against their interests, whether that's our economy, whether that's how we're building our infrastructure, our education system. Look what happened to the unemployment system last year, a system that was designed to fail the people of the state. And so it's time for something new. And I'm asking the people of our state to stand with me to break down this rigged system and give it back to the people of our state. And we need leaders that are going to stand up, that are going to work for all of the people, not just the people that voted for them or just are going to line their pockets with campaign cash. That's not how a democracy is supposed to work.
How would you govern as a Democrat working with the Republican legislature to change what you're describing as a rigged, corrupt system?
First of all, it's what I've been doing my whole life. My dad is a diehard Republican. My mom is a diehard Democrat. I was taught to bring people together for common sense resolutions. I did that when I was doing government consulting in Tallahassee. And I did that during my first legislative sessions. We passed an extraordinary bill, a huge bill for our state when we legalized hemp. It was one of my main priorities during my campaign and my first part of my administration. And we worked with Republicans who sponsored the bill, and it went through both chambers unanimously. And now we have an industry that is bringing jobs to our state, economic growth, economic opportunities, going to be a product that is going to replace so many of our harmful products in our state. So I'm used to bringing people together, to crossing party lines. And I know it's not just Democrats or just myself who believes the system is rigged. I've talked to a lot of Republicans on a pretty consistent basis. And even our House members come and say to me, I don't know why I ran for the Florida House. Every single night, I get a phone call from leadership telling me how to vote. that's not how this is supposed to work. So I know that I'd have a lot of allies on both sides of the aisles to make some of these changes, because a lot of these Republicans and Democrats run for the right reasons, and they get to Tallahassee and the special interests and power takeover. And so I know I'd have a lot of champions that would stand beside me on this fight.
Certainly there is a perception that corruption is rampant in Tallahassee. Let me ask you, though, as a follow-up, you recently amended a financial disclosure from a few years ago to include some previously unreported income, about $350,000 from some consulting work. That drew some interest. What's your response to criticism from Republicans that you still have a financial interest in the cannabis industry, which you're now in charge of regulating in this state?
Well, first of all, I am not the regulator for the medical marijuana program. That is underneath the Department of Health. So that is a
but as ag commissioner, you play a role.
Very, 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 very small role. All I do is the food back channels as far as the kitchen. So I have very little interest and oversight of the medical marijuana program. And we amended our financial forms. It was an error that we saw when we were working through my forms this year. Basically what had happened, which is very simple, I gave my attorneys back in 2018, my salary for 2018. And it was roughly 6 months of my income from January to when I announced. And we realized that the 2017 gross income also included all of my business income and reimbursements. And that should have also been reported, not just my salary. But this is all stuff that has been disclosed as a lobbyist as well, that I had to, you know, every quarter report all of my compensation. So that's been public for a long time. So this was an error on our part, and we want to make sure that we were going through transparency, which has always been a top priority of who I am as a person and who I've been as commissioner.
We're speaking with Agriculture Commissioner Nikki Fried. She is officially now running for governor next year in the Democratic primary. You were a lobbyist for the cannabis industry. In fact, you won your race on a platform of water and weed, you know, Florida's water supply, legalizing cannabis. It was popular. Yeah. Let me ask you, the governor has accused you of actually doing nothing in office. He even called you a lockdown lobbyist, referencing your prior career. He says you would have kept the state in lockdown if you'd been in charge. There's a real division between people who like the way the governor has handled the pandemic and people who are very unhappy with his governance. What's your response to Governor DeSantis's barbs at you?
Well, first of all, I saw that temper tantrum yesterday. Obviously, I'm doing something right, that I'm getting underneath his skin, that he needs to lodge nicknames for me that sounds like his predecessor, his boss from as president. And so I think that that's just disingenuous, and he knows better. He knows that my record absolutely stands up for itself, that I have lived up to every single one of the promises that I made to the people of our state. When it came to weapons, I promised that we would do complete and thorough background checks. We've done so. We've reduced the timing of receiving those checks by almost 98%. We also promised to kick the NRA out of my office. We have done that. When it comes to expansion of weed in our state, I've legalized hemp. And when it comes to our water supply, we have been working overtime to update our best management protocols that have not been done in 20 plus years. The list of accomplishments that we have had in just a short period of time, 2.5 years, is more so than previous ag commissioners in their 8-year terms in office. Mm. You know, ignorance is bliss, but it's certainly not a defense. If the governor had ever cared about the agriculture industry in the state of Florida, he would know that the agriculture industry has been so supportive of the fight that we have been doing up in Washington, D.C., fighting against the implementation of USMCA, not making sure that harmful pests and fruits and vegetables are coming into our ports. So this is a governor who's trying to rewrite history to his own narrative by spewing misinformation. But I am not surprised that this is the tactics that this governor is doing, because he knows a one-on-one policy debate with me, he will lose.
Certainly, it would be a stark contrast if it came down to you versus Ron DeSantis in the general election. Completely different worldviews and approaches. Before we even get to the general election next year, though, first you have to beat Charlie Crist in the primary. Florida Democrats have been shut out of power for a long time in this state. For Democrats that are itching to get rid of Ron DeSantis, what's your message to them? Why should they choose you over Charlie Crist? Some Democrats might think, as a moderate and a former Republican, he might be better positioned to win over some independent voters. What's your message to those voters out there?
Yeah, the message is very simple. I won in 2018, a statewide race that has typically historically been a Republican stronghold that had been a 17-point swing. So I was able in my message in 2018, this known unknown commodity from Miami was able to win the hearts and minds of people across the entire state, not just Democrats, but independents and Republicans, on my messaging of bipartisan support on issues. The issues we campaigned on impacted people across the board. And while, yes, people know Charlie, the state of our Florida wants something new, wants something different. And the only way they get that accomplished is by breaking the system and voting and supporting the mission that we have. And that's my platform. And so that it's very simple. I have been able to regain a lot of support in our rural communities that the Democrats have lost. As Commissioner of Agriculture, which is the ag community, is about 3% of the voting bloc. We have been there. We have shown that we are a fighter for their interests and for their needs, the second largest economic driver of our state. And we need to support agriculture. And I do believe that that is the winning game. Not only my support in the Democratic strongholds of South Florida, that's where I'm from, to all of my time as a public defender fighting for injustice, revising of our criminal justice system, and then as now Ag Commissioner, able to understand a lot of the concerns of our rural community and have put a lot of those issues as major platforms in my relationship with the White House and Secretary Vilsack.
And if I could, let's get in a quick call while we still have you on the line. We're speaking with Agriculture Commissioner Nikki Fried about her campaign for governor, Joe in Lakeland. Joe, you're on the Florida Roundup with Nikki Fried.
Nikki Fried, welcome to the race. I congratulate you for your entry. You are qualified. I want to tell the people that I believe she is qualified to enter this race. Her background proves that. Thank you for being a Democrat. I was a Republican until the 2000 Bush-Gore debacle. I had to walk away from that party. I'm a business owner. I'm a minority business owner in Florida in an emerging technology field. I have a drone company, Aerial Media Consultants, LLC, and we are looking to see what your governorship would bring to small minority businesses such as myself, because what you see with DeSantis, bully DeSantis, is, he challenges He likes the businesses that he, invest in his campaign. It seems that, but not the small minority business owners like myself.
So you want to know what she'll do for the small business community, yes?
Well, that,
and minority business-owned businesses. Nikki Fried.
Yes. Well, first of all, thank you for calling in, and thank you for being a small business owner. And you are absolutely correct. What we have seen in our state is an economy that's upside down, that we are only protecting the top corporations, the ones that are willing to line the pockets of the Republican legislators and Republican executive members. And that has to change. I saw it all throughout the pandemic that it was our small businesses, especially our minority business owners, that were hurting the most. I was actually on a call earlier today with also a tremendous member of the Latino community talking about this exact issue. That is about opportunity. It's about making sure access to funds. That is a tremendous problem that we've seen also in agriculture, that a lot of minority businesses didn't have the same capital opportunities and support that those in the big corporations or those who have had a tradition or generations in their family access to funding. So a lot of it is access to the capital, making sure that you also have a K-12 system that is creating an environment where we have those that are coming and graduating with intellectual property coming out and being able to go into our workforce and producing entrepreneurs. We are not a state right now that supports our entrepreneurs and gives them the tools and the access to ask simple questions. Where is our entrepreneur programs inside of our colleges and our universities? They very, very, very frequently don't exist, and they certainly don't exist in our HBC universities and those that are really promoting a lot of our minority communities to be successful. So it's putting money into our education system, is making sure that we are working with our state chartered banks, as well as the federal government when we are receiving additional loans and access to capital and resources here for our smaller businesses. And and stop giving tax cuts to our big corporations at the detriment of the people of our state, as well as our small businesses.
I want to thank you for your time on the Florida Roundup. Nikki Fried, Commissioner of Agriculture, officially now in the Democratic primary for governor. That contest is, of course, next year, but we'll be following the race all throughout. Nikki Reed, thanks for your time.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on today.
It is officially a race for the Democratic nod for governor in Florida in 2022. Your phone calls now, more of them, 305-995-1800. Mark in Miami, you're up next. Thanks for holding on. You're on the radio.
Thank you for having me. Just wanted to make a comment as a Latino entrepreneur, business owner here in Florida, that I wasn't ever really too political in the past. In fact, I didn't vote for DeSantis, and quite frankly, he didn't really show up on the radar. The only reason I'm interested in this race at all, and I even know who DeSantis is the way that he handled COVID, an incredibly difficult situation with a ton of unknowns across the country. Every move that he seemed to do that was just absolutely chastised as being moronic, actually, ended up being either neutral or rather correct, and that certainly brought him up to my attention. And I just wanted to let her know, as an independent, it's going to be a bit of a rough fight if he wins the primary. For an independent that didn't know who he was, I have, I wouldn't say a tremendous amount of respect, but I certainly know who he is now, and I have some respect for him.
Okay.
And I'm going to make sure that whoever I pick is going to help all business holders, owners, regardless of their race, color, or country of origin.
Mark, I appreciate you lending your voice here to the conversation. Melissa, I think Mark hit the main issue in 2022, no matter what the state of the virus or the pandemic is going to be in the summer and fall of 2022, how the governor, Governor DeSantis, handled the pandemic in the calendar year 2020, I think is going to be the singular issue, and how that played out in the economy, how it played out in healthcare is going to be, you know, where the non-party voter, the NPAs, are going to fall.
That's right. And, you know, it was interesting to get her comments about the governor's insulting her, calling her a lockdown lobbyist, saying that she would have kept the state in lockdown during this time of pandemic. There is real division, of course, as we all know, about whether that was the appropriate way to go in this state. Florida has had a lot of deaths and hospitalizations from the virus. On the other hand, there are millions of voters out there who like the fact that schools were mainly kept open and that businesses reopened sooner than in other states. And so as we continue to talk about this, we want to hear from you out there, Florida. You can tweet us, too, at Florida Roundup, as we talk about the governor's race, who will get your vote. And, you know, Tom, it's interesting, too, to hear Nikki Fried talk about the primary fight. We had Charlie Crist on this program, too, a very familiar face in Florida politics. Nikki Fried positioning herself as a fresh new face.
Yeah, two very, very different candidates, right, vying for Florida Democrats in this primary that's 14 months away. Of course, former governor, now Congressman Crist, Republican governor, now Democratic congressman, much more centrist, much more familiar, right, to Florida voters. Nikki Fried's first big political contest, she won as a state ag commissioner, but it was an extremely tight win for her at a time where there was a pretty popular Democrat at the top of the ticket. And that was Andrew Gillum, of course, who failed to muster enough support against Ron DeSantis in 2018.
It's going to be an interesting year and a half, and keep those calls coming here on the Florida Roundup as we round up the biggest stories from the state this week. Still getting tweets from you. And, you know, it was interesting, Tom. This was the first extended interview Nikki Fried did since declaring. So I think a lot of people were listening out there in the political world. Still ahead, the governor's standoff with the cruise industry. That's coming up here on the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup, and thanks for listening this Friday. I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville.
And I'm Tom Hudson in Miami. It is a standoff, a cruise ship standoff. The cruise ship industry says it's ready to set sail again from Florida ports in the next few weeks. But Governor Ron DeSantis says they cannot require passengers to be vaccinated before they get on board. The Centers for Disease Control is recommending that most passengers and crew get a COVID-19 vaccination for these early cruises.
Well, the governor and the CDC have not come to a negotiated settlement in a lawsuit over all of this, so a federal judge in Tampa will decide. At stake, millions of cruise visitors to Florida and billions of dollars in spending. Would you go on a cruise ship right now? Do you think that passengers and crew on cruise ships should be required to be vaccinated? Give us a call, 305-995-1800, or tweet us at Florida Roundup.
Your phone calls here coming up in a few moments. Taylor Dolvin is with us, tourism cruise ship industry reporter for the Miami Herald in South Florida. Taylor, welcome back to the program. Nice to have you.
Thanks for having me.
So the horizon on this recommendation requirement continues to move a little bit. As it stands now, as we're speaking on this Friday afternoon, will cruise passengers getting on ships at Florida ports be required to be vaccinated?
It's really hard to say. Yeah. No one has a straight answer on that. If you ask the governor, absolutely not. If you ask the cruise companies, they are currently planning to require that most passengers and their crews be vaccinated and provide proof of vaccination in violation of the Florida law. So the first CDC-approved cruise to leave a Florida port is scheduled for later this month on June 26th mm-hmm. from Port Everglades. And that company, Royal Caribbean, is planning on requiring that every passenger 16 years old or older be vaccinated.
Yeah, that cruise is set to shove off less than a week before a new state law takes effect that prohibits companies like cruise companies from requiring passengers to be vaccinated. So we are still in this very unknown area. Let's talk about what I guess we do know right now. What are the CDC rules, the Centers for Disease Control rules, for cruise passengers and vaccinations?
The CDC doesn't have a vaccine requirement. It's leaving that decision up to the companies. So some companies, like I mentioned, Royal Caribbean Group has decided that it is going to require all passengers over the age of 16 to provide proof of vaccination before boarding. But other companies are taking different approaches. So the CDC recommends that everyone on a cruise ship be vaccinated. That includes crew members and also all port personnel. But they're not requiring it. They're leaving that decision up to the companies.
And the companies, as you mentioned, have a variety of rules in place. Norwegian Cruise, for instance, has said that I believe it wants all passengers and crew members to be vaccinated for any cruise through October 31st, right?
Yeah, that's what they've said. Norwegian Cruise Line doesn't yet have any approved cruises yet, but they've said that that's their intention, that they want everyone on their ships to be vaccinated. Whereas Carnival Cruise Line is simply encouraging all passengers and crew to be vaccinated. So certainly the ones like Norwegian and Royal that plan to require people provide proof that they have been vaccinated before boarding will be violating this Florida law, which will fine companies $5,000 each time they ask for a patron to provide that proof.
Yeah, I was just, Taylor, going to ask you about penalties as we're approaching 3 weeks out now, roughly, from this first cruise ship due to leave a Florida port in more than 14 months. It's supposed to leave in 3 weeks, and there is no clarity yet on whether the cruise companies can fulfill their own rules about vaccinations or if the governor's executive order, which is in place right now, that prohibits them from requiring passengers and crew members to be vaccinated.
Yeah, from today, it looks like neither side is really giving in. The cruise companies are sticking with their plans for these requirements, and the governor, at least publicly, is saying that there will be no exception made for cruise companies. So it's difficult to see what the resolution will be. I was actually texting with a cruise company source this morning who told me they're having productive dialogue with the governor. They're confident that something will be figured out, some sort of solution, but it's difficult to understand what that solution will look like.
Yeah, Taylor Dolvin, tourism and cruise ship industry reporter for the Miami Herald with us. Your tweets and phone calls here, Taylor, we've got a number of them to get to, but I want to ask you just about that. What are the options for some kind of resolution here for the governor and the industry?
I think the only resolution that the industry will be happy with it is an exemption for cruise ships to this rule. Cruise ships are really unique when it comes to this virus. They have much higher attack rates. It's the risk of getting COVID-19 on a cruise ship is much higher than other environments. And so these companies, in working with their own medical experts and using the CDC recommendations, have decided to require vaccination. And so I think I don't really see a solution other than an exemption. Or cruise companies may decide to take their ships to other states, like Norwegian Cruise Line has said it might.
Zach tweets the show, "I think DeSantis is overstepping his authority in this regard. Once the ship sets sail, they're no longer in the state of Florida, and they don't need to follow Florida's laws once they're at sea." Gordon tweets the Florida Roundup, "DeSantis is continuing to be a bully in every aspect of his administration. I certainly hope the cruise ships hold firm. They can simply have people go to the Bahamas." What about this criticism, Taylor, given that we do know that cruise ships are notorious petri dishes of spreading this infection, and that every medical authority has made it clear that it's just not safe to put a ship to sea with thousands or hundreds of passengers in this confined space for days on end who aren't vaccinated?
Yeah, it's a tricky question. I think, you know, DeSantis is certainly publicly saying he's supportive of the industry, says he wants the cruise ships to be sailing from Florida, even points out all of the, you know, tax dollars and jobs at stake here. But like you said, the scientific and medical community are really behind the idea that now that we do have a vaccine available, it's really important that people who are planning to cruise and people who work on cruise ships be vaccinated so that we can avoid a lot of the outbreaks, stranded ships, infections, and deaths that we saw at sea last year.
As you pointed out, this is a unique kind of business. It's not a restaurant where you're there for a couple of hours and then you leave. You're there for a while. So that's the rub here.
And the cruise ship industry points out it is the singular industry that is still forbidden from operating, from generating revenue right now because of pandemic precautions. Don in Jacksonville has been very patient waiting for his number to be called here. Don, you're on the radio. Thanks for calling. Thanks for being patient. We want to hear from you.
No problem. Thanks, Tom and Melissa. Basically, will he be responsible for the deaths or the sickness of medical bills for people that occur for him saying he don't want vaccinated people on ships? As well as some of these countries that the cruise ships go to, if they say they have laws that no vaccinated, non-vaccinated people can't come into the country, you're putting other people in danger of spreading COVID throughout the islands and stuff like that in places where they may have chokehold on it or whatever. But I think that it's being selfish of him and his political aspirations to try to pass a law like this, or since he did pass it, is just to get votes, and it's not thinking about the health and the well-being of people that will be affected by it.
Yeah. Don, interesting point. Taylor, what about the kind of medical responsibilities? I mean, that has been a big key part of the protocols from the Centers for Disease Control Agency working with the cruise industry about handling the what-ifs or what-wins.
Yeah. So the CDC has required that cruise companies reach agreements with the U.S. ports that they plan to visit. So Port Miami already got its agreements with several cruise companies approved by the CDC. And the agreements basically run through the worst case scenario. What happens if there's an outbreak on board? And companies had to provide contracts with transportation companies, with hotels to house sick passengers and crew members, with hospitals too, in the case that someone needs treatment. So the idea here is that having all of this planned out in advance really avoids a lot of the chaos that we saw last year. And so we haven't gotten to the issue of the governor's lawsuit against the CDC, but basically the governor wants all of those requirements to be thrown out because they're all part of this conditional sale order from the CDC. That's basically a framework that companies are following to get back in business. And part of that are these agreements with courts.
Let's go quickly to Andy in Miami Beach. Hi, Andy, go ahead.
Hi, thank you. You know, I'm calling mainly because I'm astounded every day by the willful ignorance and the exhibits of complete stupidity from our governor. I mean, I'm amazed. I come from a family where we take yearly family cruises, you know, like reunion type things. We've been doing this for years, and we have a lot of friends that do it as well. You know, 30 people get together and do an annual cruise. I can tell you that every one of them vaccinated and would only get if the cruise industry's desired goal is met, where they require proof of vaccination.
Yeah.
Short of that, none of us want to go.
I hear you, Andy. Taylor, and not to cut you off, but we're a little tight on time with Taylor. Taylor, could the market solve this in the end? People might say, I'm not cruising if I can't be confident all my fellow passengers have the vax.
Yeah, it would be interesting to see. I think companies still want to know, though, right, at the end of the day, how many people on board their ships have the vaccine. I mean, it's just kind of a basic question to be asking in this scenario, and the Florida law prevents them from asking that question. So even if, you know, people, most cruisers decide they don't want to get on a ship if they're not going to be required to be vaccinated, I think there's still the issue of the companies really want to have this information and should have this information.
And as you said, we are looking at likely some sort of exemption or carve out. In a few minutes, we'll talk on the show about how this, critics say, the governor's moves with cruise ships and other things are largely performative. The possibility that he knew all along it would play out this way. That's a conversation for a few minutes from now. But I want to thank you for your time. Taylor Dolvin, covering the cruise ship standoff here in Florida with the Miami Herald, will continue to follow this legal matter through the courts here on the Florida Roundup. Taylor, thanks so much. We really appreciate you being with us.
Thank you.
And you are listening to the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio.
The governor's fight with the cruise industry over vaccine requirements is just one of his legislative wins this year for conservative issues. There's the voting reform bill that critics warn reduces access to the ballot. The anti-rioting law in reaction to the social justice demonstrations last summer, fining social media platforms if they kick off political candidates, and the ban on transgender student athletes. Adam Goodman is a Republican political media consultant in Tampa with Ballard Partners. Adam, welcome back to the Florida Roundup. These issues, not bread and butter traditional GOP economic issues, why do you think they garnered Republican support?
A lot of these, if not all these issues, are long overdue for a conversation. And whenever a conversation has more than one point of view, it's now labeled controversial. So big tech, for instance, this is something that has been dominating, I think it's fair to say, the national news for more than a year in terms of what constitutes free speech. That's not a small subject. That's a big one.
It became certainly an issue as Twitter took action, Facebook took action against the now former President Trump, and Governor Ron DeSantis said taking on big tech and the anti-rioting legislation were his two priorities for this legislative session, a session that was happening amidst a pandemic, right? That was happening on the heels of an economic recession, which traditionally would have been a focus in a normal year, I suppose, of a Republican leadership, wouldn't it have been?
Well, it's a little unfair. I mean, obviously the pandemic and the economic ramifications of that have been the focus for this governor from the beginning of COVID-19. But big tech, this whole issue, in my opinion, is all about the power of a few companies to control free speech, where censorship and cancellation, which I think are the biggest threats to democracy, are being decided by a few people who, frankly, are, you might say, to the left of the center line ideologically.
I think one of the interesting tactics here that the governor has taken and other Republicans has been to focus the big tech issue on speech, not on antitrust, not on monopolistic behavior.
I think that the First Amendment argument, in the opinion of the governor and many others, is the primary argument. But I think we as a country have to take a look at the huge behemoths that are at the top of this mountain and ask ourselves, do we feel okay for a couple of companies? I mean, a couple of mega companies. Are we okay with them making all the calls on free speech? I think the answer to that is no. I think the governor is not alone. Republicans are not alone in feeling that. And I think it's going to be a big issue moving forward.
The governor signed the big tech bill at a campaign style event live on Fox News Channel. He signed the transgender student athlete ban on the first day of Pride Month at a private religious school whose church has had a history of child sexual abuse and is exempt from the ban. As a GOP media consultant, what do you make of these stagings?
Well, he certainly got a bigger audience, right, in doing that. And, you know, okay, so sure, there's some politics involved in terms of how something is timed and staged. What's more important is, what is it that's being timed and staged? And I think these are all issues that have long been kind of suppressed because it wasn't considered appropriate to even address them. It wasn't, in today's word, it wasn't woke enough. I think this governor is saying basically nuts to that. I think it's fair to say the governor has a bit of an attitude about it. And it's not an inappropriate attitude, in my opinion. Some might object to it, which is, 15. I'm not going to be kowtowed and backed into a corner or backed off of something I think is right.
Adam Goodman, Republican political media consultant with Ballot something. Partners, with us from Tampa. Adam, great to have you on the program again. Thanks so much.
Always good to be with you. Thank you so much.
And when we come back, a closer look at all of the recent moves in Florida coming out of the governor's office and why critics of Ron DeSantis say these new laws and new stagings are all designed with one thing in mind, attaining the White House. That's next. You're listening to the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio.
Welcome back to the Florida Roundup here on Florida Public Radio in Miami. I'm Tom Hudson.
And in Jacksonville, I'm Melissa Ross. Well, we've been talking about the cruise ship standoff and other news and notes from all around the state here on the Florida Roundup. There's a lot to get into. We're pleased to welcome columnist Nate Monroe of the Florida Times Union with his take on the governor's moves. Hi, Nate. Good to have you.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, Nate, and join us here on the Florida Roundup, 305-995-1800. Tweet us at Florida Roundup. So for a while now, you've been arguing that whether it's this standoff over cruise ships and vaccines, the transgender sports ban, the new laws restricting voting, the anti-riot bill, as it's been called, or even the fight the governor is waging against social media giants, all of this stuff, you say everything Ron DeSantis is doing is performative. Performative. Can you explain what you mean by that?
Sure. And, you know, I think in their own way, a lot of the governor's allies wouldn't disagree with this. I think we just heard Adam Goodman articulate a version of this. What Ron DeSantis is doing with a lot of this high profile legislation is not, it's not responding to anything particularly in Florida. He is running or trying to run a kind of shadow sort of national government out of the governor's office. You know, this anti-transgender athlete legislation, for example, DeSantis had to go all the way up to Connecticut to find this sort of poster child to speak in favor of, you know, why we need this legislation. This is not a problem in Florida. It's really not a problem anywhere. But, you know, it's that is a kind of microcosm of what he's doing with these other issues. It's not about sort of responding to Floridians and Florida needs or experimenting with policy that's going to help you know, sort of everyday constituents. It's about going down the shopping list of Trumpian grievances and seeing what he can do on a state level.
In other words, mining culture war divisions in the service of national political ambitions. And really spending a lot of time on Fox News, speaking to that base audience of voters. And so you've argued that this isn't serving the state of Florida well, because we do have real needs here. We do have people who are struggling and out of work and sick and dying. We aren't focusing, you say, on the bread and butter issues. But in this polarized environment, these culture war wedge issues often tend to work. And so what are your thoughts about how this is going to play let's cast ahead to 2024, whether it's Ron DeSantis or another Republican running against Joe Biden for president? These issues exploit our tribalization.
They certainly do. And I cannot say that what Ron DeSantis is doing is not perhaps good politically for him. You know, I think where the rubber meets the road is whether it's good for anyone else. But yeah, I mean, I think these are, the so-called big tech, the kind of racial resentments he's stoking over the anti-mob legislation, issues around transgender people. These are the new kind of 21st century cultural issues that these Trumpian Republicans are trying to exploit. And it is very possible that the Republican primary will fall very much on how effective Republican candidates are at really running on those issues. I think in a general election, maybe they don't play quite as prominently, but who knows?
Nate, it's Tom. That's what I wanted to ask you about with the fastest growing air quotes political party. I'm air quoting that, the NPA, right? The non-political affiliation party. How does the governor build upon that base that he is trying to solidify and cement in place ahead of the 2022 reelection, presumably, of which doubtful that he's going to have any serious Republican challenger in that primary?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a good question. I mean, I would start by noting that Florida is to the right of the rest of the country. Mm-hmm. As you guys have talked about before, I mean, Florida is not quite the swing state it might have been in 2008 or 2004. And so, the governor is probably on fairly solid footing here, not because your average constituent is concerned about transgender athletes or this anti-mob bill, but primarily because he is an incumbent. Florida's COVID experience was sort of middling. I mean, he probably doesn't. I don't think that these issues are for his 2022 reelection campaign. I think they are all about raising his national profile and kind of getting him to that next level. And I think they already have.
And how much of that do you think is due to the earned media he's getting primarily from Fox News, other sources too? But
I think it's entirely due to that.
Yeah. Here's
a tweet. I mean, I think it's entirely because he's chosen to make himself a sort of Fox News politician. That's what got him in the governorship in the first place. I mean, he was, prior to being a gubernatorial candidate, this kind of obscure congressman from North Florida. His entire bread and butter has been his whole political career, catering to that kind of right-wing television news audience.
We are speaking with columnist Nate Monroe of the Florida Times Union about politics here in the state of Florida, particularly the governor and some of these social issues that the governor had made his priorities this legislative session. 305-995-1800 or at Florida Roundup as you're listening to the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. Nate, let me ask you about the fundamental or primary issues in the traditional Republican Party, and whether or not the governor opens himself up to any kind of political risk of losing ground on jobs, on the economy, with the political capital that he is expending on these other issues, big tech, transgender student athlete ban, vaccine passport prohibition, for instance?
You know, I think that is a really good question. And I am certainly not going to try to predict what will animate the Republican base by a 2024 campaign. And I think, it will depend in large part on this kind of civil war that we're seeing play out within the Republican Party across the nation. There are these old guard conservatives who hold principles about, you know, small government that find themselves, you know, not just stylistically at odds, but substantively policy-wise at odds with this kind of new Trump-era Republican. This big tech legislation that Ron DeSantis signed, for example, is a kind of government reach into managing corporate affairs that I think old guard Republicans would be deeply uncomfortable.
It flies in the face of traditional Republican thinking about business. Yeah, we do have a call about that. Lee in Miami. Go ahead, Lee.
Hi, thank you. I just wanted to say that this continued argument about we're censoring people on social media who are inciting riots, treason, insurrection. This is the same as, and this isn't banning free speech. This is the same as someone screaming fire in a crowded movie theater. It's not legal. You're endangering people's lives. You're endangering our democracy and our Constitution with this lie. And it's time for people to understand that there's things that are acceptable on public, on social media, and things that are not legal.
Thanks, Lee.
And shouting fire is not legal, and shouting treason, insurrection is not legal.
Thanks, Lee. And the courts could well agree with you on this. These moves by the governor may not survive a legal challenge. But as you've been saying, Nate, if the point is to get attention and be performative, it doesn't really matter, does it?
It doesn't. I mean, it really gets back to the initial point we discussed. The reason that Ron DeSantis is concerned about tech platforms, deplatforming people is because Twitter banned Donald Trump. It's not because there is some substantive matter beyond that or anything affecting Floridians' lives. It's because, well, I guess Trump is a Florida resident, so maybe he's got a technicality there, but, you know, that's really the issue.
And certainly, the move by the governor was spurred, I think it's plain to see, by the banning of the former president, which had so enraged supporters of Donald Trump. And, you know, most First Amendment experts say it's not likely to survive a court challenge. It's interesting, though, to get your thoughts about this, Nate, because all of these things are a part of a bigger picture that we've been following here in the state. These are state issues, but to a large degree, they have been nationalized. And there is a national audience paying attention to what's happening here in Florida. So, you know, I would encourage everyone to read your column and support your community newspaper, too. Let's make a plug for that. Nate Monroe with the Florida Times Union with us this afternoon as we talk about everything going on across the Sunshine State. And there is never a shortage of material. So, Nate, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you guys for having me.
By the way, Facebook just announced Donald Trump will be banned at least until 2023. The Florida Roundup comes to you by WJCT Public Media in Jacksonville and WLRN Public Media in Miami. Heather Schatz and Andrea Podormo are the producers.
We'll have to talk more about that Facebook ban for the former president next week now. WLRN's Director of Radio Operations and our technical supervisor is Peter Mertz. Engineering help each and every week from Doug Peterson, Charles Michaels, and Josh Torres. Our theme music provided by Miami jazz guitarist Aaron Libos at aaronlibos.com. I'm Tom Hudson.
And I'm Melissa Ross. Thanks for listening and have a great weekend.